I'd like to introduce Raina Heaton and Igor Choyon, who will be speaking about an assessment of linguistic development in a Ketchikan immersion school.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to start by saying that many things have happened since the time of the great Maya civilization. We had a long, long period of much suffering for the Maya people, and we are very happy that we are just starting to come out of that, and our children are starting to have better opportunities. And a key aspect to that is access to education, as Maya people that go to school have a much better chance in life. Now, unfortunately, education in Guatemala is not so good. In our province, which is called Chimaltenango, 80% of us are Maya Cachiquel, but 90% of us live in poverty or extreme poverty, and only 47% of us ever learn to read and write. And for a child that goes to school, he usually goes for 3 years, and in grade three, they drop out and never come back to school for many reasons. And only 18% of our children make it to high school. And less than 1% make it to university. And to make things worse, UNESCO has said that our education system is one of the worst in the world, definitely the worst in all of America. And what that means is that we have children that make it to high school and they still don't know how to read or write. So that's how bad the situation is over there. Now our school is called Nimalech Kachikelamak. And in this school, we put emphasis on quality education and the recovery of the Maya Cachiquel language and culture. Most of our children come from families who live in poverty or extreme poverty. And we have about 55 children right now. We're a small school. They start the school when they are 3 years of age. And right now we have children that have made it all the way to the fourth grade, and they're about 10 years of age. And every year we increment one grade so that these children can stay with us. And we're hoping to have them all the way through high school. As far as culture, we teach the ancient art of weaving to the children. We also do organic agriculture. We started to teach the Maya hieroglyphic writing system, which has recently been decoded. So we're trying to use that knowledge with our children. And the kids really love chachay, which is the Maya ball game. That's a good way to get them into culture. Also, every year we do one or two presentations of theater presentations, which are now in the Cachiquel language, and that also is good to good incentive for them to go to the culture. Also, academically, we have some very good results with our kids. For example, all the children, by the time that they're 6 years of age, they can read and write. And so by that age, they are already better than the national average. They learn to read in Spanish, but because the process is very similar, they can also read in Cachiquel. Now, our language program. First of all, I have to tell you that in the area where the school is located, we lost our language one or two generations ago. So none of the kids speak the language, and none of their families speak the language. So that's a really complicated situation to teach the language in there. In 2013, we started teaching the language, and it took us probably a year and a half to get ready to teach that first Cachiquel course that we taught. Right now, we're teaching four courses in which we teach 100% in the Maya Cachiquel language. That is math, art, the Cachiquel language course, and physical education. And that accounts for 11 hours a week, which is about one half of the instruction time that the kids receive, because the school day in Guatemala is only 5 hours a day. So about half of the time they listen to Cachiquel. We would love to teach all our courses in Cachiquel, but it's very complicated for us because we're such a small school. We only have four teachers, and they are the ones who create the materials and get ready to teach the courses. And to make things even worse, we don't have any support from the government for this kind of thing. The education materials, they're all created by the teachers, and we try to make it as fun as possible to be an incentive for the kids to learn the language. And for many of the kids, Cachiquel turns out to be their favorite subject right now. So we're very happy about that. We do a lot of games, songs, and things like that.
Okay, I should say that Igor hasn't given himself enough credit here, and that he has basically built this school and the Kachikel program from the ground up himself with this group of four teachers. So it's really been a monumental effort over the past few years. So the assessment that I'm going to talk to you about today is just the sort of the latest installment in a collaboration that we've had with Igor and the teachers since about 2012 when we started working on the methodology for this Kachikel program for this school specifically. So this assessment has as its goals to provide an objective measure of progress in the program, which is tailored specifically to both Kachikel and the students in this program, with the goal of helping it along in its efforts to create, you know, competent Kachikel speakers. I should say at the time this assessment was done, the students had only had a year and a half of Kachikel. So even though they're different ages, they all had the same exposure because the program was just implemented. Yeah. So that's pretty early, at least in the, you know, the trajectory of revitalization programs. But we decided to start early so that we could map it from basically the beginning and make sure we're getting it right early and reevaluate soon instead of letting it, you know, go on. So to do this, there were two separate assessments, one for production and one for comprehension. The production assessment was based sort of loosely on an assessment done of Cherokee in 2008, so Peter Dahl 2008. And we made a lot of the same decisions for this assessment that they did for Cherokee. So Kachikel, like Cherokee, is very verb-centric. So there isn't a lot of noun morphology, nouns are often omitted, and the verb carries the majority of the information and can have, you know, 10 affixes. It gets very complicated. So when we did this assessment, we decided to focus on verbs and verbal morphology. And in focusing on verbal morphology, we wanted to cover sort of a broad amount of ground, but so get the things that are both essential to the language, like you must know these things in order to be a speaker of this language, that are still pretty basic, in addition to things that are more unique to Kachikel and Maya languages that sort of don't have anything to do with Spanish or they couldn't have gotten from anywhere else. Also, because of the context in which the school exists, as Igor is saying, there aren't, you know, native speakers who are exposing these children in Chimaltenango anymore to the language. We only looked at things they had already studied, vocabulary items, grammatical features, in addition to, you know, whatever language they're exposed to in the process of immersion. So we stuck to that, which narrowed the things we could test as well. And the test was administered not by either of us, but by the classroom teachers for naturalness. Okay, so a little more detail on the first assessment. It was a picture elicitation task, which is very simple. Basically, you get a picture, or, you know, a picture with a couple participants, something like that, in front of the kid, and you say, what's happening here, or what is she doing, something like that. So here's the lovely picture of a woman eating. The teacher would say something like, what's she doing? The child would say, she's eating, which in Kachikel is one entire word. So the responses to this test were all sort of single word answers that constituted entire sentences felicitous to the context. We did this with 35 of the children. At the time that we did this, there were 53 children at the school and up to third grade, so they've, you know, moved on since we did this. And they were between the ages of 5 and 10. We wanted to test pretty broadly, so we had 45 items. 15 were solely for vocabulary and also for phonology testing. And then the other 30 were for verbs, 20 of which were for intransitive root verbs and 10 for positional verbs, which I'll tell you a little bit more about in a second. So each response, so for instance, niwa, she is eating, got a value for did they get the root right? So that's your vocabulary. It got a measure for phonology, did they get the final glottal stop at the end? And then did they not say gua, as is common for Spanish speakers? They said gua. Did they get the morphology that's necessary to say she is eating? So that's how we coded it, generally. But in the interest of time, I'm just going to talk to you about the coding for morphology and things like that. If you want to ask me about vocabulary phonology, please do. I would love to talk more about it. Also, this test, before it was administered to any children, was given to all of the teachers at the school. in addition to three native speakers who are not associated with the school in any way, all of whom performed between 100% and 93% on the test. So, you know, the materials were pretty sound in terms of recognizability and things like that. And they were scored by myself and a native speaker with a 98% inter-rater reliability. So, to talk a little bit more about what we were looking at for the morphology, we targeted intransitive verbs. They hadn't officially learned transitives one yet, so intransitive verbs is very basic. We looked at differences in singular versus plural morphology, as well as consonant versus vowel initial roots for these verbs. So that's four conditions with five items in each, which is where you get that 20 number I showed you earlier. And they look pretty much like that. So that's a singular, the boy is jumping, which would be expressed like this. So you have a tense aspect marker followed by an agreement marker for the subject, in this case absolutive, since kachikel is ergative, and then the root. So basically we're looking at, did they correctly formulate the first syllable? If you have two, as we see there, you get a change in the entire first syllable. So you get a change in the tense aspect marker in addition to the agreement marker, which they would have to be able to recognize. Okay, so that's sort of the traditional morphology. You've got to know this to be able to speak this language. Now for a little bit of the Maya flavor. So in addition to intransitive verb roots and transitive verb roots, Maya had this extra category called positionals, which describe shapes and body positions and things like that. And they're really common. But they have their own dedicated morphology and derivation and things like that. So we were looking to see if the children knew the difference between positional roots and intransitive roots, and if they had mastered the morphology that goes with those, as well as an additional aspectual distinction, which I'm going to tell you about now. So here is a positional, uyush, which is he or she is seated, very common. Also very easy to draw, right? So just a person sitting. And then four, which is nitsuye, which is a derived intransitive. He or she is in the process of sitting, which maybe for sitting is a little weird and you think maybe that wouldn't be that frequent. This structure is actually quite frequent because it's used with the other tenses in addition to imperatives and things like that. So there is this interesting aspectual distinction which happens with the derived intransitive that we were looking at. However, four is a little bit harder to draw, as you might anticipate. So this was our solution here, which was to have sort of a transitional picture and give the kids a minute to figure out what was going on. So here's a person standing, this is a person sitting, this is an action taking place this way, and the arrow indicates the one you're supposed to describe. And there's a special verb form that actually is used in the question, which should also sort of cue them that this is the answer we're looking for. So with that said, let's look at some results. So we coded for the tense aspect marker, the person marker, and the suffix. And then just like in the Cherokee study, we gave this measure 100% correct. They got the whole word exactly as it should have been, minus phonology. So looking here, you see this is singular and this is plural, and they actually did relatively comparably on these, despite other results, as in like the Cherokee study, where they do much worse on plurals than on singulars. So that was interesting. Also interesting is this dramatic drop here in the gray bar, which is positionals, where they did not do so well with positionals, but interestingly did very well with the derived intransitive forms, despite the fact that they probably involve the most expressed morphology with three morphemes on the verb root. So that was really interesting. Also really important is this sort of overall 100% correct figure. So you can see that children performed between, say, 26 and 47% in terms of their total achievement on these verb forms, which actually compares very, very well if you look at, again, for instance, the Cherokee data, where they had 100% correct of about 5 to 16%. So despite only having a year and a half of instruction, these children have actually gotten quite a bit in terms of verbal morphology. Okay, so another telling thing when looking at morphology is the errors that they made. So here, if you look at the first two bars, you actually see the difference that you sort of expect, where they were much more likely to produce singulars in plural conditions than the other way around, which indicates that singulars probably are easier. There's also this ID as imperative. I split them up, but they're the same thing, essentially, which accounts for the majority of the errors, which means that they we're more likely to use just the imperative form instead of the third person singular form, even though that doesn't make sense in the context, which means they're probably getting that disproportionately in the input. Also, there's this interesting wrong agreement allomorph, which means they messed up the consonant vowel initial distinction, which is a very small percentage of the time. Yeah, that didn't happen very much at all. So they got that. That's great. And then this multiple tense aspect plus agree, which I'll show you now. So imperatives in Kachikel are not bare, like in a lot of languages. You get the exact same morphology you would in the other cases, just you get a different tense aspect marker, basically. So they're not any simpler. Kids, in at least, you know, what was it, 20 in 24 instances, produce something like this, where you have an imperative that you stuck verb morphology onto, third-person singular verb morphology, which is, of course, ungrammatical, but means that although they still have sort of memorized components, they are using productive morphology, and they're just sort of not quite there yet. Okay, so that's the production test. Let's look quickly at the comprehension task, which was, again, just, it was a picture selection task, which means the child pointed at the picture that was correctly described by the sentence. So this only assessed mastery of singular, plural, sort of morphological distinctions, and the positional distinction. It was administered a month after the first test using the same items, so enough time that they wouldn't, you know, wouldn't feel super familiar, but they still, you know, knew what was going on. And this time we did it with all 53 children, 3 to 10. There were 30 items, and it took them maybe 5 minutes to complete, very, very, very fast. So here's a sample item for you. The sample prompt. So you got tachapa, riachipa, akuchiyeo. So touch the picture where they are crying. I should say that the kachikel does not include a pronoun. So the only thing that changes in the prompt is the last word, which is the verb. There are no other clues telling the child which one to pick, other than the verbal morphology. So hopefully they point to this one and they get it correct. Yeah. Okay, so here's sort of just the raw results, which look pretty good, right? Most of them are above 50% for each age group, except maybe 3 years old. But what we really want to know from this study is, did the individual children actually master the distinctions that we were looking at? So the next graph I'm going to show you is done by individual person. And the other thing is that with a number of the number of items we used, which was 30, statistically, you're performing above chance in a statistically significant way is actually around 80% achievement. It's like 21 or 22 out of 30. So let's look at that. So this is interesting. These are the percentage of students performing above chance by age group. And because the number of children in each category is different, I'll give you the numbers here. So notice first that 3 and 4 year olds never performed above chance on the comprehension experiment. So there's still work to be done here, sort of at the bottom of the age groups. Interestingly, then there's a huge increase for 5 and 6 years and another drop off for first and second. We have ideas as to why there's this big drop off for first and second, having to do both with factors that have nothing to do with language or the test, as well as sort of a half an hour increase in the teaching of Spanish at that point when they enter primary school. So that might have something to do with that change. Just to give you a few more really quickly. So 18 students had statistically significant overall comprehension test results. 40, though, performed above chance in at least one of the four categories for singulars, plurals, derived intransitives, or positionals. And then more specifically than that, 19 correctly selected singulars above the rate of chance, 26 for plurals, 22 for positionals, and then a sad 9% for derived intransitives, which I have a story for, which I'll tell you in a second. Also important to note is that there was no difference in comprehension of consonant and vowel initial roots. And so the question is, have students mastered plurality and the sort of positional distinction? And we measured this as statistically significant results in both categories, so singular and plural, for instance, indicating they mastered it. So that applies to 17% or 17 students, and for plurality, and 1 for the positional derived distinction. So Just to summarize really fast, if you take into account both the production and comprehension results, 30 to 40% of students have command of intransitive verb morphology, at least mostly. It's also likely from the error data that imperatives are prominent in the input. And they do not appear to confuse prevocalic and preconsonantal allomorphs of agreement morphemes. And then my story for the positionals, which is that from the production data, it seems that they hear the derived intransitive more. But they haven't grasped the use of it, the aspectual difference, which is why they had trouble on the comprehension test and were more likely to just pick the positional picture in those cases. So I'll turn it back over to Igor really, really fast.
We have time.
Yes, go.
Go. All right. Okay, so basically once we got the results of the assessment, then we were able to see what we were doing right and which areas we needed to improve. And I guess for those of you who are teachers, you know that this is really important, because if you give a lesson, a 1 hour lesson to a group of students, and you think that you did such a great job and that they're gonna be really interested, and then you ask them and they didn't get one word, then you know that you have to improve something in there. So this assessment helped us to see how to improve what we had wrong. And so as a result of the assessment, we have been making many changes in the way we teach the language. And that, of course, is always positive because it's improving the way we are teaching it to our children. As far as future projects, we started, we noticed that we need to write books because we don't have written stuff in our language. So right now we have 10 books already written and printed. They are already in each one of the classrooms, and we want to get more of those. We have to get more materials as the children go through through elementary school. We need more materials to teach them as well. And of course, we want to have full immersion in this school, as well as we would love to have more of this assessment, as we found it to be a very useful tool if we want to be successful in doing this project in Guatemala. So I guess that's it. Janila Nika Omachchiwe.
Questions? Russell.
Thank you for a really interesting presentation, and congratulations on what seems to be a very excellent school. I'm interested in the errors of substitution with imperatives, which I think you're probably right that it's a function of the nature of the stimulus. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you separated answers or mistakes based on semantic domain. I noticed the particular example there is sit, which is something I'd imagine little kids hear in the imperative way more than in the third person singular. It might be interesting to see if that in fact does break down. Have you analyzed the data in that way?
Yeah, well, because there aren't a huge number of items, semantic domain isn't exactly clear, and we sort of only had the vocabulary items they had learned, so there are lots of things, colors or, you know, swimming, things like that. So the semantic domains aren't super clear, but there is the positional intransitive distinction, which is sort of like that, because the positionals that you end up working with kids like this are standing and sitting and kneeling and normal things that they would, yes, be commanded to do. But I don't know. Let's see if I go back really fast to the chart of those. Where is it? Yeah, of these, that's these right here. So yeah, it happens a lot, but the others happen at least as often. Yes.
Have you tried giving this assessment to kids growing up with the language? And I'm wondering if they do the same thing. Like, do they put the verbal morphology on before an imperative? Like, is this a normal growing pain in Kachikel, or is it something specific to kids in an immersion context?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I would love to have the answer to that question. We haven't done the test with any group other than this one thus far. Hopefully, as this, you know, gets refined, we can spread it into more and more schools if they're interested in doing that. Because there are, you know, Kachikel has probably about 200,000 native speakers still, so there are plenty of children that are still learning it natively in some places. And that would be a really interesting thing to look at, yeah. Gabriel?
So since Kachikel is not spoken in that village anymore, what dialect are you teaching them? Because Kachikel is spoken differently in every village or municipality, as you know.
Would you like that question?
Yeah, what happens is we do have an entity that regulates language in Guatemala, all the Mayan languages. So they have created a standardized Kachikel language, and that's the one that we use. So it's not even the language that used to be spoken in the area. It's just a mixture of different dialects that is now the standard for Kachikel.
Have you considered teaching like the Kachikel dialect that is spoken closest to the village?
No.
Perhaps that might be useful if they're going to the market.
It could be. What happens in Guatemala is that there is a lot of villages close to us, so there is like five different ones that we could choose from, and it turns out that it's a little bit complicated because some of these dialects have lost some sounds, for example, or they don't do everything, and the standardized one is the one that has all the features that we need, so that's why we go for that one.
I'm very interested in your orthography design. In this picture, last but one, what does the apostrophe stand for?
This one?
No, last but one. There's a picture, there's some words. Last but one. There's some words, and the apostrophe, apostrophe.
This one?
No.
Next one.
Glottal stop.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, there's glottal stop and then.
Last picture, but one.
The penultimate picture.
Penultimate.
The one with the monkey.
Yeah.
The one with the monkey. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I see.
Yes.
What does
that apostrophe mean?
Those are all glottal stops. But apostrophe after a consonant typically means an ejective or an implosive.
Because in the language I converse with, they use apostrophes to mean aspiration.
Ah.
That's why he's asking.
Orthography, sometimes old generation and scholars design also apostrophe. But I'm considering this mixture. If our maybe dash or hyphen or dash might be better in our image.
I see.
Are you making your assessment instrument available?
Yes, as soon as I confirm with the people who also drew the pictures in addition to myself that it is okay to share them. Yeah, that'd be fine with me.
So we could contact you.
Yeah, please email me and work it out. Gabriela.
Yes, I was I'm very curious about that drum. Between the group of 5 and 6 year olds and the group of in first grade.
Yeah.
I was specifically wondering whether there are any, you mentioned that you have a story, I'd love to hear that. And more specifically, I was wondering whether there are any developmental psychology elements that might be a factor, or social developments, perhaps a greater, I wanted to hear a little bit more.
Great. Would you like to?
Okay. Yeah, what happens is when that test was done, first of all, the numbers of children that we have are very small. So even one variation by one of the children affects a lot of this. And what happens in that grade, we have 4 children with learning disabilities. So I think that that's probably contributing to that. 4 out of the 6, I think. So I think that might be it.
Yeah.
In terms of your actual work with the kids, then was this a test that you gave them something that they were used to doing in their class? So this was totally cold. So they'd never been tested to, here's a picture, tell me what's on the picture.
Not as formally as this, no.
Well, would that be something the teachers do this? Or?
No, like for example, this, this kind of thing where it's based on pictures and getting one child with the teacher and asking them direct questions, we don't do it. Usually the teacher does show some pictures to the whole class and then they do certain activities with it. But it's a little bit different from what the testing was.
And as a follow-up to that then, are these structures formally taught? or is this?
Oh. Yes.
Yes. We like I said, we specifically chose ones that they had learned at least semi-formally to test on purpose because of the input issue with the language. So yes, both informally sort of in the immersion context and then formally in the Kachiko class.
And one final thing, what did the teachers say about the results? Because if I were one of the teachers and I saw your results, I'd probably say, oh yeah, that meets with my informal observation of how they're doing, or I might say, oh, it's completely different. Did the teachers have any comments about this?
Yes, actually, when I first showed them the results, they were very surprised. Because that's what I said, sometimes when you teach, you think that everything that you teach is being absorbed by everybody else, and they didn't realize in some cases that that was not the case. And one of the cases, for example, was that we have a wall of words that we use every day, and you know, since you use it every day, you expect the kids to know all those words. But in the evaluation, one of those words came up, and pretty much none of the kids knew it. And so they were surprised because they were teaching it every day. So we were doing something wrong with it. So it was that's what I'm saying, it's a really good tool for us because all of a sudden, the stuff that we think that we're doing so well is not so well done. Yeah.
Okay, I'm afraid that's all we have time for, but can you join me in thanking Miki Gold?